KaiserNetwork.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the 42nd President of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton.
Please, everyone, have a seat. First, I want to thank all the people who participated today. We had a wonderful, wonderful day. Let's give another hand to Sir Richard Branson for his great commitment. And I thought Al Gore, Bishop Tutu, Queen Rania, Muhammad Yunus, all the people who participated in all the panels were terrific. Tonight we are going to have brief remarks, first from the Secretary General and then from King Abdullah. So I want all of you to take your seats as quickly as possible so that we can stay on schedule and hear from two wise and supportive people, and also get to the end of the night where our chief sponsor, Tom Golisano, will say a few words, and then Diana Krall will perform one of my favorite entertainers anywhere in the world. So thank you all for being here, but everybody sit down, because I want to now briefly introduce Kofi Annan by saying just a couple of things. When I was a young man, 40 years ago and more, I was profoundly moved by the eloquence, conviction, and commitment of a Secretary General of the United Nations from Sweden named Dag Hammarskjöld, who wrote a book called Markings. I still have the book that I carried as a teenager with the underlinings I made then. And I came to see the UN through the dreams and hopes and convictions of a great man whose life was cut short working for peace in Africa because of a plane crash. It is ironic that in the end of my presidency, I had some role in elevating to the Secretary Generalship Kofi Annan, who came out of Africa to perform, I think, unbelievable public service, who has brought great honor and greater impact to the United Nations, has forced us to focus on big ideas and challenged both nation states and individual citizens to do better. It has been a great honor for me, actually, to be one of his hired hands for the last 2 years as the special United Nations envoy for tsunami relief in South Asia, and to work in a number of countries there, which I have come to love and appreciate. He will end his service to the world in this position at the end of this year. And I would like to call him up now and ask you to join me in expressing our profound gratitude to a great human being and a profoundly important global public servant, Secretary General Kofi Annan.
Thank you very much. Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Let me start by thanking my special envoy for tsunami, President Clinton, for the wonderful remarks he made about me. And I think this has been an incredible event. And it wasn't very long ago that President Clinton started this initiative. And look at how far he's brought it in a relatively short time. I understand you spent quite a bit of time today talking about energy, climate change, global health, and poverty alleviation, as well as religious harmony, if I'm right. And I think these are very wonderful topics and very appropriate for our times. I think we all know what the energy crunch and crisis is doing to governments and countries around the world, and what it has done to the global economy, and the need for conservation if we are going to have sustainable development, and the need to develop new and renewable sources of energy. And I think the technology is there. What we need to do is to focus on it and make it available to people around the world. On climate change, I believe you've discussed enough about it, and of course, on global health, I think President Clinton is doing a great deal for the HIV/AIDS. 6 years ago, when we started the Global Fund, we weren't sure how well it was going to do. We've raised billions of dollars, but it's still not enough. So we need the kinds of initiative President Clinton has engaged in, making sure that we can get affordable medication to people suffering from AIDS in the poorer parts of the world. And as he puts it, we can't have a situation where the diseases are in the south and the medication is in the north. We need to find a way of making sure that we do get medication to the poor, to the needy, and particularly to the children. And I think he's made a tremendous contribution to this. And of course, without healthy population, healthy and educated population, you are not going to have a healthy economy. And so the efforts we are making to alleviate poverty and the global health issues go hand in hand. Some of you may be aware that about 2 years ago, I appointed a panel of eminent persons, 16 men and women, to look at the challenges, threats, and change. And they came up with a very broad definition of threat. Because we tend to consider threat as conflict, as war, something that is violent, something that will kill or affect us. But they came up with a much broader definition of the threats we face in our global village. And they defined as threats wars between states and within states, environmental degradation, infectious diseases, internationally organized crime, terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and these taken together are the threats we all confront. But depending upon where you live, your perception of threat will be very different. If I go and talk to somebody who lives in a small island state, he would tell me my biggest threat is global warming, is climate change. My island may be washed away. If I talk to someone who lives in New York, having gone through what you did in 2001, 9/11, and having just gone through the fifth anniversary, I'll probably be told it's terrorism. Others will tell you HIV/AIDS or poverty. But what is important is that we all need to realize that these are threats we all confront. Some of them affect us directly, infectious diseases would, the environmental degradation affects us all. But we need to be concerned about threats of others if we want them to be concerned about ours. We cannot ask people to be worried about our concerns, our threats, our fears, and not be worried about theirs, particularly if we are going to live in this world and make it livable for everyone. And this is where international cooperation and multilateralism and governments working together to tackle these issues are a must. It's not a luxury. And it is important that we keep on working together. And I think last year when the heads of states came here to the summit, they walked away with a very interesting understanding that the UN and the world community stands on three main pillars. That is security, peace and security, economic and social development, and finally human rights and the rule of law. These three pillars reinforce each other, they depend on each other, and you cannot have security without development, and you cannot have development without security for the longer term, unless it is embedded in the rule of law and there is respect for human rights and human dignity. And I think as we go about our work, we should all remember these three pillars and how interconnected they are. And if you do not build in a society that is based on rule of law, you are building on sand. We've seen societies that we thought were doing very well, with a slight conflict or encounter, it crumbles. It crumbles because the institutions were not strong and it was not built on rule of law. And so, my friends, let me leave you with our three pillars that we are all going to be focused on: security, development, and human rights. They are essential, they reinforce each other, and we should press ahead bearing these three pillars in mind, because that's the only way we are going to build solid societies for the future and for our grandchildren. Thank you very much.
I know that several of you, like me, were at the morning plenary on how to manage our differences and were deeply moved by the presentations of Bishop Tutu, President Karzai of Afghanistan, and Her Majesty Queen Wanya of Jordan. In my life, I don't think I have ever wanted anything more totally beyond politics than to play some constructive role in reconciling all the peoples of the Middle East. I always believed that there was a future that all the people, the children of Ishmael and the children of Isaac, could share there. I was deeply inspired during my service as president by His Majesty King Abdullah's father, King Hussein, who literally, as he was nearing his last breath, came to the United States and helped me to negotiate the last significant peace agreement we had in the Middle East at Wye River, after which, I might add, the Palestinians were in control of more of the West Bank than they are today. When King Abdullah ascended to the throne of Jordan upon his father's death, I felt both enormous hope and great concern for him, because he and his wife represented what I hoped would be the new Middle East. People who were proud of their own heritage, deeply committed to the welfare of their own people, understanding that in an interdependent world, we had to have a reconciling, forgiving, and unifying spirit. Amidst all the things that have happened in the last few years, every time there is a terrorist incident, every time there is a peace breakdown, every time there is a dysfunctional performance, I kept trying to say to anyone who would listen, we must never forget there is another Middle East out there. There is an Arab world to which the West is largely blind on bad days. There are Muslims that we do not hear because they do not speak with a gun or a bomb in hand. It was a great honor for Hillary and Chelsea and me to go to Jordan after we were in Israel to mark the 10th anniversary of Yitzhak Rabin's assassination, to travel to Jordan to be with the king and queen, and to walk through that one of the hotels which had been blown to smithereens by the disciples of the now departed Mr. Zarqawi, and to be able to remind the world, if ever so briefly, that all the targets of this Arab-Muslim terrorism were Arab Muslims, Jordanians, and that people may enlist killers with religious rhetoric, but they almost always have political purpose. It has been a hard thing for King Abdullah to be faithful to his faith and to bring together people to remind them that it is a peaceful and loving faith, to faithfully represent his people and to articulate and air their grievances, and to stand as a beacon of hope to those in his world and those beyond who long to believe that we can all live together as friends. As a young man, he has borne enormous responsibilities. He has done it with grace, with courage, with an unbelievably gifted partner, and he gives us hope that tomorrow can be a better day. I ask you to join me in a warm and grateful welcome to His Majesty, King Abdullah of Jordan.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. President Clinton, my friends, thank you and thank you all for your warm welcome. It is a pleasure to be with you this evening, and Rania and I are honored to participate once again in this remarkable world gathering. If I may, I'd also like to take this occasion to wish President Clinton the best on his recent milestone 60th birthday. In my part of the world, there's an old saying that gray hair is the torch of wisdom. You're getting ahead of me now. And if that is the case, President Clinton, your wisdom is lightening the world. And we are all grateful for the Clinton Global Initiative, now in its second year. Its very name puts the focus on two critical aspects of leadership today. One is initiative, the will to take those first, often difficult steps to move past today's limits and crises and initiate positive change, to act and to act boldly. The second is the global context, the recognition that just as we share the future, we share the right and the responsibility to shape that future. Gathered in this room are leaders from every continent. And each one of us has a duty and deep desire to serve our people as I seek to serve Jordan and the Arab nation. But today, a critical part of our duty to our own nations is to reach out to others in international cooperation and respect. The fact is,
the 21st century world has the capacity to provide better lives for billions of people. The tools and knowledge exist to reach developing economies and societies and expand the well-being of people significantly. And that would be a win-win process for all sides. But to succeed, we must take our dialogue to a new level, the level of action. People, especially young people, need to see tangible results. Three key areas need our urgent attention, and they are development, global understanding, and conflict resolution. And tonight I'd like to say just a brief word about each. Sustainable development is a virtuous cycle. It both creates and benefits from economic stability and growth. Starting the cycle requires global cooperation and often tough choices. Now, developed nations must choose to make a commitment to urgently needed debt relief, to increase direct assistance, and to fairer trade policies. And we in the developing world must choose good governance and sound economic measures. All this suggests a framework for global development as well, a framework of partnerships. And this brings me to the second area of our urgent attention, the need for global understanding and respect. The vast majority of people around the world reject extremism, but more needs to be done to fight stereotypes as well as disrespect. And that means teaching our young people the common bonds of our religions and civilizations. Such efforts are underway across the Muslim world. And almost 2 years ago, Jordan released the Amman message, and it articulates Muslim values of tolerance, compassion, and respect for others. But the road to moderation and understanding is not for us alone. All faiths, all cultures have a responsibility to advance the global respect on which our future depends. My friends, in building trust, dialogue, however important, is no substitute for action. We must live up to our commitment to justice and peace. And this brings me to the subject of conflict resolution. And nowhere is it more important than in my region, the Middle East. President Clinton, you once said that the road to peace is no easier, and in many times it's harder than the road to war. Yet the road to peace was one that you and my late father, His Majesty King Hussein, walked, and that we all must walk today. Continued conflict is detrimental to the future of the region. Recent crises demonstrate the urgency of ending the violence and destruction. And it's time for a lasting, just solution, one that addresses the central problem, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. The Arab Peace Initiative, first articulated in 2002, provides an effective basis for peace. Now, as an international community, we need to build a partnership of action to encourage and support a return to negotiations and keep the parties moving towards results. And we must act now. With every day of delay, more lives are lost and more futures destroyed. My friends, the global challenges are very real. But you who are achievers, know better than most that what we envision, we can make happen. And together here, you can create a global vision, a world of genuine peace in which all share the promise of our century. And I believe in that partnership, we will succeed. Thank you very much.